We were honored last week to get together with the group Chicago right before their Milwaukee show. We went up to Milwaukee to talk to them, even though they came to the United Center. We needed to get a kind of a day's jump on that. And we sat down backstage with the guys and talked to them about their early days, you know, as the big thing, as Chicago Transit Authority, their evolution into the group Chicago, their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And one of the things that we talked with a vocalist, songwriter, keyboardist, Robert Lamb about was what he is most proud of all these years now with the group Chicago. For what does he hold the most pride?
I'm proud of the body of work. I'm proud that we've never phoned it in, you know, and somehow we've been able to maintain, and as we brought in guys over the years who didn't start out with us, somehow they were on the same wavelength that, you know, every night we want to throw down, yeah, and have it be a great experience for the audience, and I'm really proud of that.
You look back at this body of work that really, you know, for lots of us is the soundtrack of our youth. Really, you know, these are the songs that we're playing when we were making our own personal memory. So I mean, they're meaningful, and most of those songs, a pretty good majority of them, are from the head of Robert Lamb, right? Which ones are you most proud of? Which ones are your greatest?
Well, I have to say the ones that we play every night. You know, 25 or 6 to 4, does anybody really know what time it is? Saturday in the Park, Beginnings, Question 67, 68, Dialogue. All of those we play every night. I mean, for me, songwriting is, it's never easy, but it's simple. You know, at its best. So yeah, 25 or 64. I was living in a house with other recently migrated kids from Chicago up above Sunset Strip, and I was playing on a 10-string, 12-string guitar. There were a couple strings missing. I played the riff as best I could because I'm not a guitar player, and I was just really trying to, I couldn't really think of anything to say. I had the riff down. I kind of knew what the music was going to do, the melody was going to do. But I knew I needed to say something, so I just kind of wrote a song about writing a song. And I needed something, I needed a line to, should I try to do some more? 25 or 6 to 4.
while you were sitting cross-legged on the floor.
I was.
Waiting for the break of day, searching for something to say, dancing lights against the sky, giving up hot hope by eyes, sitting cross-legged on the floor.
How about that? The group Chicago, 25, their first big hit song, 25 or 6 to 4, Bobby Lamb telling the story of how he wrote it. How about the guitar playing of the late Terry Kath?
That's amazing playing.
Holy smokes. There's a documentary that's going to be coming out about the group Chicago in which they tell the story of when the group Chicago was first starting out. They were the opening act, get this, for Jimi Hendrix at the Whiskey A Go-Go in West Hollywood, California.
Oh, in the late 60s?
In the late 60s.
Isn't that cool?
And Jimi Hendrix said, who is that guitar player? He said, that cat is better than me.
Well, he was listening to Hendrix, but no doubt.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hendrix said about Terry Kath,
yeah,
that who is that cat? He's better than me. And that's you can hear that in that 25 or 6 to 4. Nice to have Susan with us on the program today.
Thank you, Dean.
I can start over boring you to death with my love for the group Chicago.
Who doesn't love Chicago?
Right? Glad to hear you say that. It really brings back so many memories for me. So, like, you know, these, like this song, Dialogue Part 1 and 2, it's like one of the first songs, it's like 9 minutes long or something like that, you know. So as a college DJ, you know, we were crazy, you know, playing these long songs and full album sides, you know, so it brings back a lot of memories, you know, for that. But I mean, these are the songs that are the soundtrack of my youth, of my misspent youth. You know, so I love this. I have a connection with the group Chicago. When I was a baby DJ, the first concert that I ever hosted, you know, where you go up on the stage and you go, hey, welcome everybody, here's, you know, whatever the group is that you're introducing. The first time that I ever did that was with these guys, Group Chicago, at Chicago Fest. I'm not even really sure what year it was, but it was at Navy Pier. So it must have been like late 70s, maybe, something like that. And I introduced the group Chicago, and I couldn't have been more excited. You know, we got to watch that show out there. So I've been a longtime fan, longtime supporter, you know, pals, acquaintances with these guys forever. And that's why I appreciate so much that right before, last week, before their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that we went up to Milwaukee. They played in Milwaukee, and then the next night they were at the United Center, but we had a scheduling conflict with something, so we went up to Milwaukee, and we talked with all the guys. We talked with Robert Lamb and Lee Locknane and their manager, Pete Chiavarelli, and longtime friend Jimmy Pankow, who just these guys really have just been unchanged through the years. They're good. All I can say, good Chicago guys. You know what I mean? They're like really down-to-earth, salt of the earth, great guys. I've enjoyed knowing them all these years and couldn't be more happy for all their success and their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One of the things that we asked Jimmy Pankow was, you know, his reaction to this great honor of the induction.
Better late than never. I was never holding my breath. You know, regardless of the reasons or any animosity, if there was some, you know, that's all unimportant. I'm just glad we have been inducted before I needed an iron lung. <you know. laughs> But I will accept it with grace and honor. It's a very proud moment. And, you know, it's about the fans. It's whether or not the hall was jumping up and down about our inclusion is very small compared to the fact that 40 million people came out and gave us their stamp of approval. And it was almost like there was no other right thing to do other than put the band in the hall. So yeah, here we are, and thank you to the fans, yeah, that love us so much.
Yeah.
Why we're here all these years.
Yeah. So what are you proudest of? I mean, that's quite the honor, but just in terms of what you guys have accomplished in all these years, what are you most proud of?
about the band?
I think it's, you know, full circle. It's back to the music. I'm proud of being part of a musical legacy that has become timeless. Any composer or artist has an ultimate dream of leaving something that will outlast them. I mean, something that will be around after they're long gone. Look at Mozart, Beethoven, Ellington, go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Picasso.
What is it for you?
Michelangelo.
What is that one thing that you feel like you're proud to leave behind?
Well, these, you know, you sit at a piano, and it's therapy. It's expressing very deep personal feelings that need this outlet. Again, I say we are very lucky to have an outlet that becomes a platform which is shared by millions of people. I mean, it starts at a piano with an individual that's full of angst, piss and vinegar, joy, whatever it may be, and you need to express this to bring it to fruition. Next thing you know, you're on a stage and you look out and there's thousands of people singing those words that you wrote down on that paper at that piano. Mm-hmm. And the song becomes a communion with masses.
Yeah.
That is something that we never dreamed would have happened.
It's like
proud of the fact that I'm a part of that musical legacy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like I was telling Robert that, you know, it's the songs that you guys wrote, but those songs are part of the soundtrack of my life. You know, like when I hear certain songs that I remember exactly what I was doing at that moment. That's your Beethoven legacy that you gave me and all your other fans.
Absolutely.
So what's your favorite one? Is there, when you get up there, these songs that you're going to play tonight, you've played them a million times. Is there one that you just cannot wait to get into it?
Well, it's a song that I didn't write. It's a massively written song, in my opinion. And I get a chance to blow in it, too. And that's Beginnings. Robert's a heck of a songsmith, and I've always enjoyed his writing. He might say the same thing about my stuff. I don't know. We have a very deep mutual respect. But that's the song that takes me off somewhere else every time I play it on stage.
Be a proud father, though, of the songs that you wrote. Which one are you?
Well, I think the most unique is Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan. That is an attempt to present pop rock in a classical format. It's a multi-movement piece. It's almost a whole side of the second album. And we didn't know what edits were back in the day. And the story is, I'm in my car in Los Angeles, and I got the top down. I'm driving down Santa Monica Boulevard, and the real Don Steele comes on, you know, the biggest pop station in LA, KSJ. He goes, here's a new song by a new band called Chicago, which is destined to go number one. I'm going, and it's made me smile. But I didn't know about edits. I went, wait a minute. That's not a single. That's a movement in the ballet. So I discovered it like a fan. You know,
that's wild.
Wow, what's this? Awesome. And that was a moment of clarity that was unforgettable, because at that moment I knew, okay, we're there, you know. We got a hit, or a potential hit, and it's a breakout, and now we're going into the big time, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a memorable moment, but it's just a small piece of this ballet. Mm-hmm. I didn't write a hit single, I wrote a 13, 14 minute piece.
Right, right.
And it's still hard to play. I mean, if you get lost in that chart on stage, you got to do some backpedaling because it's hard to catch up.
Yeah.
And everybody in the band pays attention when we do that song.
Yeah, the whole thing
was
mind-blowing.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that.
And I remember at radio that, like, you took like the hook of Make Me Smile, and then you edited. Wasn't it the back end?
Yeah, so it was the reprise on the end. Yeah, the reprise, the return.
Yeah.
Yeah, it opens and closes with that. So we sewed them together for the edit.
Yeah, I remember that. What do you remember best from the early days? From the CTA, you guys at DePaul, the super early days?
Man, you know, we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the fact that it all started right here in Chicago, and it's a city that we'll always feel special about. I mean, this is where it all started. This is where we grew up. I mean, I still feel like I'm home when I'm in Chicago. I mean, till the day I die. And the music is an expression of all of the things that affected us in our growth in Chicago. We are a Chicago journeyman's band. It gave us a work ethic, the midstone and get it done. Had we not had that work ethic that we established from living in Chicago, we might not have persevered. We might not have overcome some of the tragedies and difficulties in a long career, which are bound to happen.
I was surprised to have learned two people who were influential in the growth of the group, Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. These are not names that you would think influenced Chicago, but they did.
Well, a lot of people don't know that, you know, we were an opening act once. Even before we had a record, as many are, we were on a gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go, which became kind of our new home away from home after we left Chicago and Barnaby's on Rush Street. Barnaby's was the place, man. That's where it all started.
Yep.
And here we are, move ahead, and we're at the Whiskey Go-Go on Sunset Strip, opening for Albert King, of all people. And we're in the dressing room ready to go back on stage. And as we turn to go out the door, here's Jimi Hendrix standing in the doorway. It was like, whoa. And at that time, of course, he was the guy. He was the rock and roll god.
Yeah.
You know, psychedelic and in all his glory. And as you might have heard, you know, he says, you guys have a horn section that sounds like one set of lungs and a guitar player that's better than me. You want to go on the road? Yeah, so we wound up being the opening act for the Jimi Hendrix experience in 1968.
Yeah.
And then Janis Joplin, we're at the Fillmore West in San Francisco. It's Big Brother and the Holding Company with Janis, Santana, and CTA. And we're backstage, we're in a dressing room, minding our own business. Janis Joplin comes walking in to our room. It's ratting her hair. She drops her brush and goes, "Pick up my effing brush." And Walt Persinger, all 60 of them, stood up and walked over there. "Pick up your own effing brush and say please." She was our best friend from that moment on because she respected us.
Yeah.
And it led to an invitation to again open her tour.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, two stories that created exposure that you can't buy.
Just names that you don't associate with Chicago. Why do you think you guys have lasted so long? This is rather unprecedented that a group has this kind of success.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we're still around, probably the most important reason, is that like you said to me a minute ago, you know, the music has become part of the fabric of lives. We didn't know this would happen. And we look into an audience night after night, and you can see people looking at each other. They're remembering where they were, what was going on when they discovered this song. And since that moment, they embrace that song as a moment of of significance in their lives. And that has caused us to want to come back again and again to share that communion with the audience. That's the magic. It's the give and take with the with an audience. And that, above all, has given validation to this career.
Yeah.
The music is about special things to all people. And we love this. We love our work. We love our work. We are passionate. I guess maybe that's why Ellington did it till he died, why Sinatra did it till he died, why Picasso died with a brush in his hand. You know, you have this gift. You are lucky enough to be able to manifest it,
right.
and successfully in our case.
Right. Are there
why stop?
Yeah. Are there times when even you guys are surprised that you survived?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, we lost Terry Kath. There were drugs. There were mistakes. There were days of apathy, decadence, too much partying, all of that, all of the above. And at some point, God or a higher intelligence or your own wisdom taps you on the shoulder and says, let's look at the priorities. And we did. We did. And we are very, very lucky to be here. We are very blessed to be able to enjoy this gift for so many years.
Yeah.
You know, we're grateful for this. How many years do we have? You know, the 50 years went by like that. How much more do we have?
Right.
We're going to do it till we can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
So what do you want to say to Chicago, the city, on WGN?
I love you, Chicago. I do. I do. I do. Chicago is... it's home for me. It'll always be home for me. I might live somewhere else. I might travel all over the world and see beautiful, exotic places. But Chicago will always be special because it will always represent everything I love, and it will represent the stakes that I planted to get where I am today, and I thank that city for giving me the tools, the respect, and the awareness to do what I did to be here today. And the pizza, the dogs, the beefs, and the people of Chicago.
After the pizza and dogs, the people.
Not necessarily in that order.
Your love.
some special stories, more and more behind-the-scenes interviews with not only Chicago but Cheap Trick this coming Tuesday and Wednesday on the WGN-TV News at 9. So if you're a fan, if you know someone, make sure they're watching. We'll repeat them on the morning news Tuesday and Wednesday nights. Oh, there's another great song. Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 9, Wednesday and Thursday mornings on the WGN-TV morning news. The full induction ceremonies, by the way, HBO will be broadcasting. That will be on April the 30th.